Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.
From salmon sperm facials to menstrual masking, social media is awash with skincare hacks promising perfect skin. But beneath the viral views, is there any evidence for any of it? Or are we just rubbing garlic, bird droppings and wishful thinking into our faces? Joining us now is Dr. Bebe Du Harper, who's from King's College London and from St. John's Institute of Dermatology, to teach us a little bit about the science behind a lot of the digital nonsense. Bebe, welcome to the programme.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So you're interested in aging medicine, preventative medicine, and all this. Why skincare? Why are you interested in this area?
Well, as a dermatologist, I see lots of patients in clinic who actually tell me about these skincare trends and the kind of things that they're learning from social media. And I think it's important for us as dermatologists, as clinicians, to understand the information that people are being exposed to and also just be able to communicate effectively, because ultimately skincare can definitely help people have the skin that they want or they aspire to. But because that is such a desire within our society, it's also a great way to get views on social media, which is a big incentive for a lot of creators.
Yeah. It's insane how much the beauty thing has blown up on social media. You know, the skincare routine, the makeup, it's wild. There's so much money and so much content for a man who doesn't use any of these skincare products. It is, I'm amazed by the variety and just the volume we're talking about. But let's talk a little bit about some of the trends that people see, because I think often we like the idea of a quick fix, a miracle cure, something new that might solve a problem that we have. Is most of the stuff that we see, is it mostly trying to deal with acne? Is that the thing? Or is it wrinkle reduction? Or what is the biggest biggest trend you see on the skincare social media?
So I'd say, obviously, anti-aging and sort of reducing wrinkles or minimizing aging is very big. Hair loss is also massive on social media. So I'd say, around the time of the pandemic, I would say it was a lot of anti-aging. And then in the last 2 to 3 years, hair loss and hair growth has really taken off. And then in terms of like specific sort of conditions or skin conditions that people have formed communities around on social media, acne and eczema have particularly strong communities on social media. So these are people who have skin conditions, skin concerns, sharing their experiences and the challenges that they have and things that they've tried. And at the end of the day, you know, people have to live with skin conditions and they will do lots of things that they don't tell doctors. Ultimately it's their experience, their choice. And people, you know, our patients are often trying things that they don't necessarily disclose to us. It's very interesting to see this as a consumer of social media as well, from my perspective as a doctor.
Yeah. So there's one called The Morning Shed. What is this one?
So The Morning Shed is probably, if you've done any kind of scrolling on social media, you might have seen either someone doing this or someone reacting to it. And what The Morning Shed is that what you'll typically see is a picture of someone with their head covered in layers and layers and layers of stuff. So like eye patches, some sort of chin strap, you know, some sort of collagen mask, maybe something in their hair as well. And they'll go to bed with this very elaborate contraption on to minimize. Often it's based around like minimizing aging. And and then sometimes they'll also be sleeping with like an LED mask on as well, you know, lots of really extreme things. And then The Morning Shed is the removal of all of this gear, essentially.
Right.
And the reason I highlight this trend is because I don't think that many people are actually doing this. I think that these sorts of trends, where there's a real shock value, a visual shock value, actually is designed for social media. It's a performance. It's not necessarily a real thread. So it's a bit like, have you ever come across those crazy morning routines where someone wakes up at like 2 a.m. and then does like 10 million things and, you know, does an ice bath and then does a workout and then does a sauna? You know, it's along the same theme. And it's like, how many people are actually doing this and how much of it is performative for social media? And then, you know, the trend is almost being created for the purposes of this kind of performance. And then someone somewhere thinks, oh, maybe I'll actually try that. And then it becomes a thing, but it was never a thing to begin with.
So the taping yourself overnight and then removing the tape, like that has no effect on one skin.
So there will, it will have an effect on skin, but most of it is temporary. So obviously if you go into a bath, what happens to your skin? It becomes very waterlogged. You can see there is a visible change to the structure of your skin because your epidermis, your top layer of skin, will absorb a lot of that liquid. So if you put on, you know, a moisturizing mask, which has like an occlusive effect, then your epidermis, your skin barrier will become saturated with lots of water, essentially, and possibly other ingredients, depending on what's in there. So there are definitely some effects, whether they're temporary or whether they do something more long term, depends on what's in those products. But a lot of the kind of the visual shock value of like someone coming out and having this extremely, you know, if they've got a chin strap on, obviously that might kind of influence how puffy they are in the morning. There will be a temporary effect, but whether that's long term beneficial, I don't think it's very likely.
Menstrual masking is a similar sort of idea. Is it that you apply menstrual blood to the face? And the idea behind this is there's stem cells that in menstrual blood. Is that the idea?
I'm convinced that it's a fake trend that's been designed for shock value and views on social media. So, you know, if someone comes onto TikTok talking about, you know, you're missing out on like the biggest, cheapest hack to get stem cells on your skin, just put menstrual blood on your face. I think someone's made that up to get views personally. And you can see why, because you say something really shocking and extreme, people are going to watch to say, what the hell, even if they're not interested. So, you know, but there is obviously, there is some literature about what kind of things are inside menstrual fluid. And obviously there's also this actual entity called platelet-rich plasma, or PRP, which was, I think, really popularized by Kim Kardashian, you know, many, many years ago. She posted a picture of herself on social media having this vampire facial where she had, you know, blood all over her face.
Yeah.
And what PRP is that, you know, you take blood and then you spin it down and you extract a particular fraction of it. And this fraction contains certain ingredients such as growth factors, which are obviously your own. And it's often used as part of a therapy. So
does that work? This is like platelets. Is it like plasma with loads of platelets in it?
Yes, exactly. So it's, you know, it's just normal blood that you've spun down and then you extract, you can sort of aspirate a particular fraction. But the most kind of, one of the strongest indications for this is actually in the treatment of hair loss. But this isn't applied topically, it's actually injected, generally speaking.
So, I mean, there's so many of these, you know, trends on social media. Are any of them based in any, like, chemical science? Are there trends out there that actually do make sense? Because someone told me a long time ago, they worked in skincare. They said, there's only one thing that actually is, you can say on the label that is, you know, age, it prevents aging, and that's SPF. And if you have SPF in your product, you can put all these other stuff in it, but you can say it prevents aging. But actually the thing that's doing that is just the SPF. And then I think that same person said, but now hyaluronic acid or whatever it's called, that also has some sort of evidence.
So there's lots of there's lots of things in skincare that can be beneficial to the skin. So it really depends on what your kind of main concern is. So from an aging perspective, there's kind of two, very broadly speaking, drivers of aging. What we call intrinsic aging. So this is your biological age, you know, the accumulation of years or living on Earth, and then you have extrinsic aging, which is really related to what you're exposed to over those years. And if you've experienced a disproportionate amount of exposure to certain things, that will accelerate your aging rate beyond your chronological years, if that makes sense. A lot of sun Your skin will age faster than someone who's had less sun, basically.
Yeah.
So you can obviously make choices to minimize the amount of UV that you're exposed to. So the first thing would be like, don't actively try and get a tan. So actively tanning is actively aging your skin. But you can also seek the shade. So there's lots of behavioral things that don't involve paying for a product or buying a product. And then obviously in terms of actual things that you can choose to implement, you can have sun protective clothing and also sunscreen. So these are all strategies that can help reduce the amount of UV that is reaching your skin, because that UV is one of the most significant drivers of skin aging.
Right. So what you've said so far is, number one, bit is basically nothing to do with any of the ingredients that are on the front of any of these products that skincare companies sell. Apart from SPF.
A lot of skincare companies sell SPF. It's a growing area of the skincare industry. Because,
for sure, but all this Q10, now with extra zionic, whatever it is, a lot of that stuff doesn't actually do anything.
So I would say there are some broad categories that can help things. So retinoids, so anything which is kind of a vitamin A derivative, so retinol, retinaldehyde, these you can buy over the counter or you can get a prescription for depending on the type. This is an ingredient that really modifies how your skin barrier is forming, and okay. It has an effect in terms of smoothing out your skin barrier, strengthening, thickening your epidermis over time and minimizing the appearance of wrinkles. And it can also be very helpful for acne as well. So there are things which can definitely influence skin biology. And then you also have antioxidants. So antioxidants include things like vitamin C. You'll often see antioxidants paired within sunscreen products or separate to sunscreen products. Mm. And they kind of work synergistically. So if you get UV exposure, what it does is it triggers the release of things called free radicals in the skin. And these are like unstable molecules which bounce around and cause damage. And these antioxidants mop up that damage. So when you are being exposed to any kind of thing that could cause free radical release, UV being one of them, the antioxidants help address that before the damage is done as well. So yeah. It kind of works very synergistically and preventatively.
Right. But like those things we've kind of had for quite some time. I'm just wondering what your thoughts are as a doctor and a dermatologist, when you walk into somewhere, a pharmacist, for example, that would sell all of these different products with all these different claims, the scientific evidence behind a lot, because some of these are incredibly expensive. The scientific claims made on these bottles are very, very scant. And I'm wondering, what your thoughts are on the availability of all these different products that don't actually have a scientific claim attached to them.
Yeah. So it's a complicated area, because in every claim that is on a piece of skincare does have to have some evidence behind it. So it's not legally allowed within the EU.
Yeah, but they often don't. Those claims are often really sort of fuzzy.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big issue, genuinely. It's an area which I've done a bit of research in, actually. So it is a big issue, because it's really hard for consumers to navigate those claims or try and read between the lines of what's actually been done. The reality is that when you develop a pharmaceutical product like a drug, like an acne drug, it's evaluated in a very specific way within a very specific framework, which is really about efficacy and how it's been evaluated in a clinical trial.
Yeah.
Now, when cosmetics are brought to market, it's not evaluated in the same way. Mm. It's mostly evaluated for safety. And then it has to make claims that are reasonable to the evidence that's been presented. So that can mean a range of things. But one thing that cosmetics cannot do is it cannot claim to treat disease, because that would make it a drug. And it cannot really claim to influence skin biology too much. So even though some of the ingredients might actually be doing something that you arguably is influencing skin biology. So, a moisturizer helps support the skin barrier. That's quite important, actually, for someone with eczema. The way that it can be talked about is actually kind of restricted by the regulatory landscape. So in a way, it's not necessarily the fault of the skincare companies. It's just that they're sometimes sitting in a bit of a weird grey area.
Really interesting. Dr. Bebe Du Harper, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Have you tried any of those? We would love to hear your stories. And if they went well, if you felt like subjectively they worked for you, we would love to hear that story, what it was like. Some of that stuff is mad.
Future Proof Extra
with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland
on News Talk.